Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Sure thing. So I feel like, you know, well, last week was predominantly taken up by
the classies.
So we'd have to do a little bit of backtracking.
Yes. There's been a
pretty few amount of things, you know, that kind of got glossed over last week.
Yeah.
But we had planned for that because we figured this week wasn't going to be...
Right, exactly.
Exactly eventful, so... which it wasn't.
No, I mean, it was what it was.
Right.
But all the big stuff was last week.
Sure. But the big one, obviously, is Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Well, I think it's mostly that WWE and the Jetsons are going to make a movie.
All right. Cool your Jets, amigo.
I'm sorry. No. I honestly have to mention this real quick. Because have you seen the trailer?
No.
Don't watch the movie, but watch the trailer.
All right.
I kid you not. You guys.
If you message it to me, I'll watch
it. The plot for WrestleMania Wrestling Jetsons movie is they discover that in the year 2017, the Big Show was frozen in ice. And they de-thaw him in Jetsons time when wrestling is not safe for humans. I'm assuming due to concussions. Okay. And so there's only robots that wrestle.
I'm guessing living that high of an altitude with Jetsons, it's probably like they have a softer skull.
So the Big Show enters the world robot entertainment.
No.
The W is silent because it's still WWE.
No.
And then, no. And then the Big Show takes over the world. And so the Jetsons have to travel back in time to get other WWE superstars to go fight the Big Show.
I was really hoping for, like, a, like, animatronic Vince McMahon. Just like a mall Christmas, you know, setup.
I'm just saying, as far as I'm concerned, the reason we haven't seen Big Show in the ring recently is that he's somewhere frozen in a block of ice waiting for the Jetsons to thaw him out.
So this is basically the plot of Captain America.
That's 100% my kayfabe now, is that Big Show is frozen in ice and will be thawed out 100 years from now to take over the world.
I mean, imagine our surprise when he comes out for WrestleMania this year to face Shaq.
Well, he'll be frozen later then. He'll be frozen after WrestleMania.
Sure, yeah, okay. It can be later in 2017.
Exactly.
They're just predicting already. Or they're kind of showing their hand on what their plans are.
Well, I mean, so far...
Did they say why Big Show was frozen? Or I'm guessing that's covered in the movie.
They did not say. I'm assuming the movie will tell us. So far, everybody in the trailer is still employed by WWE, which might be a first for them.
Is it anybody who might be on the cusp?
I don't think so. I didn't see anybody who I was like, uh-oh. Like, because Wave Mania is not even out yet, and Paige is in that.
Well, she's still in the company, but she's on the...
But is she?
Yeah. She's definitely on the edge.
Yes.
And she's been, you know, still prominent, like, you know, as far as I can tell, prominently, you know, displayed on
Total Divas.
Yeah. So, nah.
All right.
So, Wrestle Kingdom 11.
We have to talk about Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Okay, so you've told me that you've watched it.
Yes.
The whole thing.
Yes.
Cool. All right, so initial thoughts. Let's main event aside.
Okay. Obviously, we'll have to...
The main event is its own category.
Yes, yeah. We will get to the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, a big thing is it's almost a shame that the main event was what it was because the rest of the show has been swallowed
right
by the main event.
Yeah.
Because
like I said, like I think I mentioned last week, Goto versus, I'm blanking on his name, super serious guy who headbutts everybody. I can't think of his name right now, but that clearly, like, that was my match of the night up until that point.
Yeah,
and it's a match that Shibata. That's the other guy. I couldn't remember. Goto versus Shibata. Like, I really enjoyed that match. It was personal, and you don't even have to follow New Japan all that closely to kind of, like, you know, helps from the commentary.
Right.
But just watching the match itself, a story is being told there, and it was a. I enjoyed it a lot, but again, not a lot of people was talking about it because the greatest match ever was the main event.
I will say
it's a gift and a curse.
There were
the three matches before the main event.
Yeah.
I think the three matches were all like match of the year contenders.
Sure.
Was it January 4th it was?
Yeah. Naito and Tanahashi was incredible. And then I think Shibata and Goto was before that one.
Yeah, because I think they were the first of like.
Right, and then the.
Looking back, the three.
Then because that was the Neverweight or the Never Championship. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Junior Championship.
There was not a. There wasn't a great opener like there had been for 9 and 10.
Well, the opener was an anime cartoon. Or no, that was the pre-show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, it was the beginning of the main show, because the pre-show was the...
the pre-show was the Rumble.
Yeah, the Rumble.
Which was, like, a very interesting thing, because, like, Rumbles, to me, have been built up as special and rare. And, right. Like, here's this, like, goofy, throwaway
right.
pre-show Rumble.
Yeah, which Michael Elgin won, which, although, I mean, believable.
You know what? They had pins in the Rumble, which I would be very interested to see that.
So, like, pins and over the top rope.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like, oh, so we don't have to come to a standstill when Mark Henry comes out. So
I forgot who it was, but there was, like, 5 or 6 people piled on top of one person to get a pin.
Yeah.
That's a dynamic that you could put into that matchup when you throw in pins.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then the actual first match was ACH and versus, what's it? From Cruiser. He was on Cruiserweight. From Japan.
I don't remember.
I'm blanking on names tonight.
Yeah. I will say it is... I had to watch Wrestle Kingdom 11 with a cheat sheet.
Sure.
Just to, like, remind me of who was who.
Right.
And it's just a not being familiar. It's like if... I remember watching WrestleMania 26 was my first WrestleMania back.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was just watching... Raw, and so there was still a brand split, and so there was a lot of like kind of knowing who people were,
yeah,
and at the same time not. So it felt a little bit like that, of having that cheat sheet of like, oh, this was this guy, and like, you know, I can really quick Wikipedia, oh, this is the feud,
yeah.
But having that all,
I mean, the only real person in, I just because, you know, Wrestle Kingdom was my main, like, point of reference for the last couple of years, and then, like, an occasional show here and there, but I'll, you know, still keep up with, at least through, you know, internet postings or blogs or whatever, yep, of exactly what's going on. The only person I didn't know much about was Naito, just because he had been gone for a while, and then he came back, and I just kind of set New Japan on fire the past year.
Yeah.
I'm still blanking on who was the good guy, Tiger Mask. He had that really great match against Brian Kendrick in the Cruiserweight Classic. Yeah.
I will say this. If you've seen the main event.
Kota Ibushi. That was the guy wearing the good guy Tiger Mask.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. If you've seen the main event, do yourself a favor and go watch
the rest of the show.
At least those three matches before the main event.
I mean, I was interested in watching, you know, Cody's first New Japan match. And honestly, like, see how, you know, Juice Robinson had progressed. Because last time we'd seen him, he was breaking Kevin Owens' nose as CJ Parker. Because I've honestly, his run in NXT, other than, you know, his weird, like, you know, yay earth signs, other than that, his NXT tenure was kind of forgetful.
Yeah.
And honestly, I felt like he did a really good job in that match. He was trying hard, like really hard to, you know, kind of get Cody over as a heel.
Yeah.
Also, one of the other, like, either everyone talks about the main event, or everyone talks about Tama Tonga and his brother, who used to be Camacho, their tag team match, where they were just cursing up a storm to the point where the English commentators could not continue without laughing their freaking heads off.
Yeah.
Man, it was one of those things where, like, it kind of took me out of it for a second. I was like, all right, you could... Calm down there, Camacho.
Yeah.
I know he's got a different name now, but he's Camacho.
Some people always are.
Just like Juice Robinson, Juice Robinson, it's like I'm having to consciously not call him CJ.
Yeah.
You know? But clearly, you know, the reason we're all here, the reason why, you know, I was so fervent on Joel watching this one. Granted, I've told you a lot of times to watch the other, like the past few ones, but this is the one where I was like, you've got to watch this because we have to talk about it on the podcast. And it's because of the main event.
Yeah.
Few accolades. Basically, it's been called the best wrestling match ever by Meltzer. He's given it the incredibly rare 6-star rating. I think maybe one or two matches. He's given that.
This is the first official 6-star rating.
Sure.
He has said of other matches something to the effect of, this match destroys the concept of 5-star ratings. This would be a 6-star.
Right.
But like a lot of that was like house shows and stuff. I think this is the first ever,
like,
6 stars, flat out, no question. Right. This is a 6-star rating.
The first 6-star match that has been broadcasted to a mass audience.
Yeah,
fair enough.
He doesn't give ratings out to every match.
Right.
So the other matches that were worthy of 6 stars were not rated matches.
Right. There's a lot of great moments that we could, you know, really dive into. And clearly, like, watching it, it was a special match.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the best match ever? I have no idea. I don't think I would go that far with it. But then again, I don't... If someone asked me what the greatest match ever was, I don't know if I could give them an answer. I have my favorites, but, you know, that's a whole different animal.
So, let me be very upfront. This was an incredible match.
Yeah.
The match was made in the last 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was built in such a way that it needed the first 46 minutes or whatever.
Sure.
For the last 8 minutes to have the impact that it did.
Right.
So I've seen a couple of complaints of like, this was nothing, and then an 8-minute spot fest. And it's like, yes, but no.
Yeah, but like they built the foundation in those mm-hmm. 40 minutes.
Well, I would say, like, as somebody who has not seen a lot of either of these guys,
mm-hmm.
I've seen more of Omega,
yeah,
obviously, but I haven't followed either of them fervently.
Mm.
The Rainmaker is not a stylish finisher. It's not an amazing finisher.
Honestly, I like everything in Okada's arsenal except for the Rainmaker.
But here's the thing. The way the match worked, when he had 3 failed Rainmaker attempts before he... Like, when he hit it, it was like no finisher I've ever emotionally experienced because of how the match built up.
Mm-hmm.
And like, sitting back watching, I was like, Rainmaker's not... Nothing amazing. Nothing special. It's mm-hmm. not...
I mean, it's a whole hell of a lot of... A whole hell of a lot better... I can't talk. It's better than the People's Elbow, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yes. if we're ranking finishers, it's gonna
definitely fall well above the People's Elbow.
But it's nowhere close to the top 10 or top 20 finishers.
No, absolutely.
But the build up, the way the match worked, like I don't think I have felt like that until like when I thought the streak was in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Seeing a finisher connect that I thought wasn't going to connect like that.
Yeah.
That being said, I do want to address the concept of the 6-star match.
Okay.
Meltzer always has said, like, this is one guy's opinion. Most anybody who talks about it always has this to them, like, this is just one guy's opinion.
Sure.
But it's Meltzer's opinion, and his opinion carries weight.
Like, he's basically the grandfather of wrestling journalism.
Yeah. And I don't want any of this to come across as we should ignore it because it's just one guy's opinion, because I think his opinion carries a tremendous amount of weight.
Sure.
I think he has well thought out,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything that he says about this business and this art form.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, was this a 6-star match?
Definitely, to me, it definitely is 5.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, when you set up a scale, when seemingly 5 is as good as you can do, then that's as far as I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, oh, let's give it an 11. It's like, well, you know, that doesn't exist on the scale, so you might as well just give it a 0. You know? Like, it's just kind of like people saying, I'm going to give it 110%. Like, that's...
Yep.
No, that's not
I will
possible.
Say, to me, on a... five scale,
mm-hmm.
a 5-star scale,
yeah,
you get 1 6-star. You get to drop that sure. once.
And this is apparently like the only official one he's given. Right. So that's fine.
And that's fine. If you start doing it more, right. then you're doing a 6-star scale.
Right.
And you're just being stingy with your 6-star.
And, you know, your 6-star carries less and less weight the more you do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If this is his one use, his 1 6-star, I mean, you're saying, like, this is the best match of all time. Mm. I thought about it a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought about, like, I don't know if I'm ready to jump on the, like, this was the 6-star match.
Yeah.
But I thought about it, and I'm like, okay, this happened January 4th. Is anything going to beat this? Is this already match of the year?
Yeah.
And to me, the only thing that will beat this out as match of the year is based on the storyline.
Sure. Yeah.
There might be a match that is not as good bell to bell as this match is.
Yeah.
But because of the storyline built around it and building up to it, will hit me in more of an emotional way.
Right.
Where that match will be like, okay, there's a good chance The Undertaker's retiring this year.
Right.
If they do that right, I will have to seriously consider Undertaker's retirement match versus this match.
Right, because, you know, again, moves in the ring are incredibly important, you know. But the execution of the entire package, the story and everything, like, that's what we mean when we see something as match of the year or whatever.
Right.
It's the environment surrounding it as well.
And, like, and it caused me to, like, go through and, like, all right, what 5-star matches? Mm-hmm. What are my 5-star matches?
Right.
I'm like, okay, immediately comes to mind CM Punk, John Cena, Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm. Not the great, like, technical match.
And those things, like,
but the environment and the story
was enough. It's not a perfect match.
Was enough.
And the fact that the match ends on Vince coming out and Cena going, not this way.
And then
getting distracted and
getting pinned, yeah.
Yeah. That bothers me a little bit. Yeah.
Me too.
So it's not a perfect match, but it is because of the atmosphere, because of the storytelling, because watching that live and seeing, you know, knowing it could go either ways and genuinely not knowing what will happen and knowing that one of the ways that it could happen could have serious ramifications throughout the industry and seeing all that potential laying before and feeling that emotional clinch at each pinfall. Both ways, because a Cena pinfall meant that the dream was over, and a Punk pinfall meant, like, so it was very emotional.
You're right.
So that's a 5-star match for me.
Right.
Hell in a Cell, Undertaker, and Mankind.
Sure.
Is a 5-star match for
me.
It is arguably a terrible wrestling match.
Sure. Yeah.
It's slow and it's plotting. And it's messy, and it's undignified.
And it's a match that you spend a lot of the time not watching because you're trying to look away.
Right. But we've talked a great deal about how do you introduce people to wrestling? What matches do you show them first?
Yeah.
And I will say this match, Okada Omega.
Yeah.
I would never show that as a first match.
No.
That is not an introductory match. That match works because
you love wrestling.
Yeah, you are literate in the language of
wrestling. The drop kick that lands on, I want to say Omega. I might have it backwards, but they show it in slow motion where it's just, you know, a casual wrestling fan or just someone new probably doesn't want to see that right off the bat. And I believe it was a back body drop onto the non-gimmick table.
Yeah.
That just kind of, that had to have wrecked Omega completely. That's not exactly something you want to show a first-timer.
I think if I showed a first-timer, it would be boring.
Right.
I think the deliberate pace. And
because they don't know what they're watching.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
Well, and just to say, like, here's a 53 minutes of wrestling. Here's literally a Game of Thrones episode length of wrestling.
Yeah. Now, if I wanted to show somebody wrestling for the first time, I would probably show them like something of Daniel Bryan's between maybe the SummerSlam with John Cena, that match, because you know it also helps with video packages.
Yeah,
do that, and then maybe show them the video package and the two matches from WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get somebody into wrestling, that's a great way to do it.
I've always said Mankind, Undertaker, Hell in a Cell is my go-to match in response to, you know, it's fake, right?
Yeah.
So
I might show, I don't know. I might show the last 8 minutes of Okada Omega for that now. Because there's a lot of legit shots that land.
No, there are, but like, as far as the level of like,
oh right,
you have had to deal with like it's fake blood comments,
sure.
And it's like that's a real cell, and that guy fell those real 16 feet. Yeah, like, there's no.
I wouldn't show them the Shane drop, just because there's that padding underneath that.
Oh yeah. No,
which again, I'm not complaining about.
It should be there.
It should be there because that is a very high hell in a cell compared to the one that Mick fell off.
Well, the thing is, Mankind just keeps going.
Yeah.
And it's like that happens and it goes back up and it falls through and then the tacks and then the mouth and the note and like you're just like
is that the one where like when he falls through it there's like a chair that also lands on top of him? Okay. I can never remember if that was the same match.
So and I will be honest, my goal with that match sometimes is to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It is to make you feel bad for disregarding what these people go through.
Sure.
With your you know, it's fake comment. So it will always be my go-to for that. My, you should enjoy this. It used to be mine, and then I was like, no, it is turning more people off than it is helping. Before Heather, I would have said a ladder match. Like, in all honesty, for those who don't
because
know.
It's a simple concept. You reach up, you grab, you win.
A lot of high spots.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Heather's first match was Money in the Bank. Her first pay-per-view was Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Right.
And
she was more... And, you know, she kind of like... I think it's something that we kind of knew, we just never mentioned. And that was, you know, just how long people take to climb up the ladder.
Well, but
she was the one that pointed out, and it was, you know, like that breaking the glass on us. And we're just like, oh, right.
Well, like, I knew it took a long time, and I knew what it was for, and it was fine... Because I had already bought into it. It is not a good thing to use to get people to buy in.
Sure.
I think you're right. Daniel Bryan is an excellent...
Right, because he's one of those... Especially that run between SummerSlam and WrestleMania. And a little bit before SummerSlam, obviously.
Yeah.
And to WrestleMania 30 is a great way to get someone emotionally invested in somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that I feel like once you hook somebody like that, you're good.
I think... if you are out there contemplating wanting to show people something, I think a WrestleMania match is a really good call just because of the spectacle.
Yeah.
A
modern WrestleMania match.
Modern WrestleMania match.
Don't go to like WrestleMania 2, maybe WrestleMania 3, but
maybe
there's some stuff that's kind of dated where, you know, nowadays people aren't really going to marvel much at Hogan versus Andre.
Yeah.
Until you get to the point where he lifts them up, because they, like that's the moment,
right.
But they don't know that that's, you know, that's the big thing.
I would say like consider strongly something with Cena in it, just because they know Cena. There's that instant grab connection.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna know who Cena is. They're gonna know who The Rock is. So if you wanna, you might want to use somebody with that crossover appeal, so they have that initial feeling of I can root for somebody. My go-to for a while was Shawn and Taker 2.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
And I think most people will tell you Shawn and Taker 1 is a better technical match.
And it is. But as far as like hooking somebody into a story of a match, it's easier, you know. Because again, like the video package ahead of that match takes care of informing that person everything you know from Shawn and Taker 1. And you don't want to show that person 1 and 2 back to back right off the bat, because you know it would be tiring for them, you know, mentally. Like they can't. It's a, you know, it's a lot of motion in the first one, and even more motion in the second one. That's a lot to process and a lot to take in and accept.
Yeah, and so I've used that one a couple of times, And in every case, it's been assumed that the, Streak versus Career gives away the ending because he's not going to retire. He's a famous wrestler.
Yeah.
And so that has caught people off guard.
Yeah.
Which I think is helpful. All that is not in any way, all this talk is not in any way to diminish what happened at Wrestle Kingdom 11.
No, no.
You don't, you know, like, just because Shakespeare is not what you learn to read on does not diminish Shakespeare being a good thing.
But these are things that you start somebody off with so that eventually over time and, you know, watching more and more wrestling, eventually get to this point and then they can appreciate it for a masterpiece that it is.
Yeah. And I will say, if I'm to stand by the, you know, if on a 5-star scale, you get 1 6-star.
Yeah.
In your journalism career, you get one, you get to give out 1 6-star.
I can't fault him for using
that. I can't fault him for using that. I'm not ready to give up my 6-star yet.
Right. And, okay. And here's the kind of, like, again, the gift and the curse of this match happening January 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Like, A, it sets the bar incredibly high. And B, people are going to be trying all year to beat it.
Yeah.
You know? There's going to be a lot of people around the world who watch this match and, you know, kind of take a mental note of, like, all right, well, I would have done it this way, or this is what I would do to make it better. And then they go out and not necessarily try to mimic what they did, because you're not going to be able to do that.
Right.
But use that as motivation to have a match that somehow tops it.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if it can be done, but I'm excited to see people try. Hopefully they don't go too far with, like, insane spots. Because honestly, insane spots, like, they don't do much for me. You know what I mean? Like, as far as, like, objects and stuff, like, I don't know. But then again, I'm more wowed by, you know, technicality.
Spots are tricky. And part of it is they do have that setup lag. I mean, we both did Shane as our spot of the year last year, and it had to be, but at the same time,
it was a bit of a setup.
The whole match was a setup for that. There was, you were not paying attention to the match until, like, okay, there's no point in getting excited about anything until Shane gets on top of that thing. And we have to wait 7 minutes for Shane to climb while Undertaker stays still.
Yeah.
So spots are a tricky thing. This is a match I'm going to come back to several times throughout the year and several times from now on.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously, like, it stands alone already as match of the year at this point. And it's kind of probably going to stand alone for a while, at least probably until WrestleMania season, because that's when everyone kind of pulls out their best match.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have, you know, especially NXT, like the NXT takeovers, that's where they really, you know, turn it up to.
I am
11.
I'm really curious. So I feel like we have definitely hit the point where takeover events do not always surpass the previous one. Because we were having it for a while. It's like, how are they going to? Oh, they did. How are they going to? Oh, they did.
You want to hear a funny rumor that's been going around after WrestleMania or at Wrestle Kingdom 11? apparently, a lot of people in WWE has watched that main event.
Well, I'm assuming so.
So much so that creative has basically, not necessarily thrown out what they were going to do for the main event of WrestleMania, but now they're sitting around thinking, all right, we need to do whatever we can to make sure we have a great match at the end of WrestleMania. I was like, that should be your goal every year.
Yeah.
Why are you just like, I really hope that this isn't the first year you came to that conclusion.
Well, they didn't last year.
No, they did not last year. They had a match that was just as long.
Well, and I
and that, you know, by comparison, is a boring match.
I know that I am sometimes giving you being WWE, I'm giving you an impossible thing where I'm saying your best match goes on last and your title match always goes on last.
Sure.
And do it that way. And
sometimes that doesn't work, because sometimes the guys who can't really pull off the best match of the night is your champion.
Right. And sometimes they should be your champion. Sure. I don't want to be like, no.
Only the best technical wrestler ever. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, only my favorites in championship matches, because that doesn't serve proper story.
Right.
But I get that that's sometimes an impossible task, but it is, they are two separate goals that should be a strived for.
Yeah.
At every show, I think.
Absolutely. So if if we end up getting a great main event for WrestleMania this year, you can thank Wrestle Kingdom 11. If we get a horrible main event of WrestleMania this year, then clearly WWE doesn't understand what the words great match mean, and we should all pity them.
I have to wonder if how much WWE creative is aware slash threatened by New Japan.
I don't know. Well,
because like WWE is the Coca-Cola of wrestling.
Right.
TNA tried to be the Pepsi.
They're RC Cola.
Yeah, like they never were, but they would have told you they were the Pepsi.
I don't even know if they're RC Cola. They might be Jones. It might be Jones Soda.
Oh, I like Jones Soda.
Yeah, but they're not.
I don't like Jones Cola. Jones Blue. Blue Jones
Soda. I meant Cola, Soda. Yeah. Blue's okay. Blue's but no, but Cola's awful.
So there was at some point, there's a fairly well-known marketing adage.
Yeah.
That talked about Coke versus Pepsi, and Pepsi was releasing all these commercials about, like, you know, people drinking Coke being sad, and then, like, a Pepsi comes in on a skateboard with a backwards hat, and, like, oh, Pepsi beats out Coke every time. But Coca-Cola commercials around that time never acknowledged Pepsi.
Right.
It was just, like, they were so far ahead and above, they were just like, drink Coke, it's great.
Yeah.
And there was a refusal to acknowledge this competition that through their marketing, Pepsi seemed to insist was there.
Right.
And that is a very strong correlation between TNA and WWE.
Absolutely. Or every other company in WWE, really.
Since WCW, absolutely. Yeah. You remember TNA, it was like, the Monday Night Wars are back. And WWE's like, the new number, who dis?
Right. WWE's just like, I'm sorry, who are you again? And why do you have Hulk Hogan?
So I wonder if New Japan has or will strike any level of like, oh, we need to keep an eye on them.
I mean, certainly as when it pertains to, you know, WWE's cultural penetration of like the network in Japan, that's going to be a struggle.
Yeah,
you know, it helps that they've grabbed, you know, AJ Styles and Nakamura, you know, they were about to debut Tozawa on 205 Live. Things like that help, but it's one of those things where they need to at least have it on their radar because. Again, when John Cena, who is very cryptic about his Instagrams, you know, his Instagram posts, is just flat out posting a photo of Kenny Omega,
yeah,
they're aware, and they as they should be, because this is a match that really seemed to resonate throughout the entire wrestling world, whether you pay attention to Japanese wrestling or not, you know, everybody was being made aware of it, and there's a lot of new Japan fans now.
Yeah,
well, just like, you know, the like watching Wrestle Kingdom 9 for me, watching Kota Ibushi versus Nakamura, and turned me into like now a like for the rest of my life I'm going to be a giant Nakamura fan because of that match. And a lot of people are having that same moment times a billion, it seems, with Omega and Okada.
Well, and part of it is
a lot more radars now.
New Japan is riding high off of this. Yes. Everybody,
as they should.
Yeah, everybody is. They know, or they should know at least. Everybody is paying attention to the next New Japan thing.
Yeah,
and they have they have the eyes of the wrestling world on them, and I see no reason why they won't take good advantage of that.
And honestly, and the more and more they get like English commentary, the more they'll be able to.
Yeah.
I believe they're still going with not every one of their pay-per-views or special events not all of them have English commentary.
Yeah.
But what they do is they'll package them up on, I believe a channel's called Access or something like that. And then JR does provide commentary later Because that's what they eventually did with Wrestle Kingdom 11. Kind of, you know, in segment.
Right.
In segments and put that on Axis. Which is interesting considering it already had English commentary. But whatever. I mean, I'll take JR over anybody else.
Well, I will say I was very impressed with the commentary.
Yeah. Especially when they got down to the more serious, you know, especially with the main event and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Them laughing through Tama Tonga and Camacho.
Yeah.
I mean, it was entertaining in a different way, but it's one of the things I can't even blame them.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? The Japanese Godfather guy who mm-hmm. had his hose. they're basically doing the same shtick that, Jerry Lawler would do.
Right.
So again, like they're taking notes from the, you know, some of the best.
I mean, that's the thing is like, still. It is hard in this day and age to not set yourself up as JR and Jerry Lawler.
The when they get to the point where, and I, again, they might already be at this point because I haven't really watched any. I haven't watched a whole lot of New Japan, especially now that Nakamura is, you know, in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be at the point where they have English commentary live for all of their pay per views. But from last I heard, they don't.
Yeah.
But when they get to that point, I feel like that's when they've really got to where other companies, specifically WWE, probably should start taking notice. And again, I don't want them to look at this and be like, all right, well, we need to do something to sabotage and take over, you know, Japanese wrestling. And just assert our own dominance there. It's like, no, that's, you need to just make your product
up your game,
better,
yep.
Like up your game. Like that's the message. Like, I don't want them to be like, all right, well, because of that, because of these great things that New Japan's doing, we're throw together a Japanese title and make like, you know, like the UK thing that they're doing now is like, just do that there. You know? And I'm not saying that's the goal of the UK championship, the tournament and their show. But that's how it's getting looked at, you know,
mm-hmm.
considering, World of Sport just like debuted and a lot of people are really excited about that with, you know, and you got other promotions that are growing in the UK, you know, What Culture.
I mean, yeah, like I'll be honest, What Culture is my biggest foray into
because
UK wrestling.
Because it's accessible.
Exactly.
They don't even have to they don't have to come up with their own platform because they're doing it through YouTube,
mm-hmm.
which is the smartest thing any promoter's ever done.
Yeah.
You know, them right here CWF. Right here with CWF, they put together a Thursday hour show that they post on YouTube.
Yeah.
Sometimes longer because their matches go long and they're mm-hmm. okay with that because it's YouTube. They don't have time restraints.
Yeah.
You know, so it's other promotions that don't do things like that are really shooting themselves in the foot in this day and age.
I think so.
And WWE almost doesn't even need their own network. They just put it on YouTube. Sure, it'll be free, but you get every single person who has a YouTube account can.
I feel like I'm.
Access it.
The network's always going to be the network because of the pay-per-views.
Sure, sure.
And
because I believe What Culture also does like iPay-per-view.
They do. And
which is fine.
As we continue to evolve, I think that the concept of the pay-per-view will be adjusted.
Sure.
We're basically calling them pay-per-views for lack of a better word. I can't imagine how many people are actually paying for some of these pay-per-views now.
Yeah. It has to be other countries that just don't have the network, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, those are probably the only places where pay-per-view buys are even, you know.
Well, some of these, some of these things, these no way outs and these roadblocks, I know that they're not like, oh, I was thinking about it. I haven't bought one in a while, but this is the one that's catching my eye.
Yeah, they're not even doing the weird comparison thing that JBL used to do. Like, you could be paying this, but here's what you would be paying for pay-per-view. Like, they're not even doing that anymore because, like, it's not even worth it because what sane person would be paying $30-$40 for Backlash?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Speaking of WWE, to move over to them real quick. The Undertaker did come back this week.
He did.
And
he announced he was going to be in the Rumble.
Didn't
do it on SmackDown.
Didn't do it on SmackDown.
But apparently he was in town I'm assuming for the WrestleMania 34 announcement, because he's at the press conference the next day, which is really weird. He's not a press conference-y type of person or character.
Did he sound odd to you when he came out on Raw?
I mean, I didn't really notice. I mean, I don't really think I was paying attention all that much, because like, I knew he was going to say, so I didn't pay a whole lot of attention.
I can't quite put my finger on it. Just he had like a weird ambiance to his voice almost. Like he wasn't quite back in the Undertaker voice.
Fair enough.
Because he has an Undertaker voice, because he didn't have it when he was Biker Taker. Like, he has rest in peace voice, and it was like he was struggling to find it again.
Just too focused on them holes. Because, man, again with the digging holes thing.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. You're an Undertaker.
29 holes, 29 souls.
I think it took him all this time to get the, like, digging holes metaphor down.
How does he not lose? How does he lose the Rumble now? Give me a realistic scenario where Undertaker doesn't win the Rumble.
I mean, the only thing I can come up with the top of my head at, like, just in this moment would just be, like, whoever knocks him out, you better probably have that person face him at WrestleMania. Or for the time being, that person is someone that just catches the ire of Undertaker for the next couple months.
Well, until
he leads into WrestleMania.
But the thing is, my only real two options for Undertaker at WrestleMania are AJ and Cena, neither of who are going to be in the Rumble. And like, do you have anybody else on the roster that you'd want to see face?
I think Cena might still be in the Rumble, because I'm assuming AJ somehow wins.
Okay.
Don't even put it that way. Like, one of the two, whoever doesn't win, might be in the Rumble.
And then go on to face Undertaker?
I don't know.
Who are you saying right now is your pick for Rumble?
I don't know.
Rumble
I don't. I haven't been able to really make a pick, because I honestly, the field's kind of wide open right now. To me,
like it's Undertaker.
You feel like it's Undertaker?
I feel like it's Undertaker, and then Undertaker goes on to WrestleMania to face Cena or AJ, and whoever they decide, and then, you know, that's his closeout match.
Yeah. Although we have heard that they're stepping away, they're like basically trashing the idea of Cena versus Taker. That was the last rumor. I find that really hard to believe.
And on one level, you're sitting there, you're like, how is it not Goldberg? Goldberg is beyond tier at this point. But obviously, like,
him and Brock are going to take each other out or something.
And like, I don't want to watch that again.
But we're going to get it at WrestleMania.
I know.
They're going to, again, if that is the headline, and if the rumor of, you know, their reaction of WWE creative reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 11 is true, and that goes on, if that still goes on last, then we know that WWE's idea of what makes a great match is severely flawed.
I don't know. The way that match happened and the unexpectedness of it.
I really do think it was more because of Goldberg's injury status. He couldn't have gone. I don't think he could have gone.
That's fine.
10 to 15 minutes.
I don't really care why it happened.
Sure, but the fact that it did happen.
But the fact that it happened is this weird, bizarre gem of a moment in modern day WWE now, that I'm almost like, I don't want to go back to it.
No.
Especially because, like, I want to see Goldberg face somebody else. You mean Undertaker, between losing to Brock and vengeance on Brock, Undertaker fought Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Like, it was a terrible build-up feud and a middle-of-the-road match that those two guys should have been better than.
Yeah.
But there was... there was so much time removed. Brock had several. Brock had a whole, you know, John Cena Suplex City thing, held the title for several months, fought Roman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a long period of time of Brock's career between Undertaker and Undertaker.
Yeah.
So this, because these guys are not capable of having back-to-back matches because of their schedules.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that. I'm not asking for Goldberg and Brock to have weekly schedules, but because of that, I don't want their very rare limited appearances to just be a weekly schedule stretched out over a year,
right?
Where they have to trade wins and go back and forth.
Yeah, I don't know. But now that you bring it up, yeah, it is very difficult for Undertaker to end up where we think he's going to end up and not win the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm bummed for that, but there's a lot of other people on the roster that would be much more excited about winning the Royal Rumble in 2017.
I want to go into a Rumble and be like, who could win?
And I mean, we've got a little bit of that.
We got a little bit of it, yeah. But like...
And still, I feel
like the last time it was like a real open playing field, it was Del Rio in the 40-man Rumble.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them were painfully obvious. Some of them were like, oh, please no. Mm. Like, and also like Triple H last year was like, well, I don't know if he's in. If he's in, he's winning.
Right.
But I don't know if he's in.
And they, you know, they did pretty well of keeping that secret.
But as soon as the music here, like, match is over.
Yeah.
I'm just going through the motions now.
Yeah. There was like a brief moment where they were almost able to maybe Dean's going to win. You know, mm-hmm. And then he lost, obviously. But again, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
When it was just those two. When they took out Roman, I was like, oh, snap. And then it almost felt like, oh, anything's possible. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no. No, Triple H is in this match. No. Mm-hmm. Very few things are possible now.
And just, I don't want that. If it's going to be Undertaker, I don't want Undertaker and, let's say, Dean again. And Dean comes so close. Like, I don't want that, like, the guy I'd really like to see come out of nowhere and win. Coming so close at the end of the match.
Yeah. Because part of the thing that... Because honestly, like, you don't... Undertaker versus Cena at WrestleMania, if that's where it's going to end up, they don't necessarily need the titles. They're big enough names.
They don't need the titles.
And they can frame the story to where it's relevant. Maybe John Cena turns heel and has like a vendetta against part-timers. I don't know, because like he was accused of being one. So he's like, no, I'm not a part-timer. I will take out all these other part-timers in the meantime. I don't know, something along those lines. Granted, it would be helpful if... I think the more compelling storyline is a championship versus career match where Undertaker has the championship and John Cena wants to... either tie or break, depending on the championship status until then, tie or break Ric Flair's record. And that means a lot to him. And
I
don't know. And they somehow get to the conclusion of Undertaker putting his career on the line.
I will say, I am ready for John Cena to go ahead and tie it, because I don't want every time Cena is in a title shot for the next 3 years.
Kind of go ahead and get rip the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I don't need that to be part of the build-up. For the next 3 years.
No, it needs to go ahead and happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If this is the way Undertaker's going to go out, I would rather it go out something like that.
Yeah.
Where something's kind of at stake for both guys. Now, granted, from Cena's standpoint, it's more of a positive for him. You like more to like fight for glory rather than fight for your life, which is Undertaker's like fighting is for his career or whatever.
Yeah.
But still, like, I feel like that's a better way of going about it. But again, like I said, they don't necessarily need the championship to get the match over. And it probably would be a main event caliber match.
Yeah.
You know, even without the championship.
No, it should be.
So, I don't know. It's full on open. Now, I do want to bring up that they did announce that WrestleMania 34 is going to be at New Orleans. Do you think that's too soon? I understand the reasoning for it. Like, it's... Apparently, it was, you know, kind of last minute... Not last minute, but, you know, the proposition was brought to WWE not that long ago.
Yeah.
They basically wanted it, because that's going to be the big 300-year anniversary of the city, and they wanted WrestleMania to be a big part of that. So that's why I understand, like, them looking back, seeing how much of a success 30 was for them, for the city, wanting to go ahead and do that again for this big celebration. I understand that.
Personally, to me, the city of WrestleMania has never... mattered that much. It's not a Raw where like, oh, this is a Chicago crowd. It means that like it's the WrestleMania crowd. They're gonna go to wherever WrestleMania is. The indoor outdoor aspect of the arena is kind of the only thing that
and it really
affects my viewership.
Yeah, and if it's outdoor, then it's just there's not that big of a difference from arena to arena,
right? You know? And it was like. The only issue is outdoor on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, all right.
Yeah, open air, West Coast, not a great combination when you try to do Undertaker's entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have places like, you know, AT&T Stadium last year where it's like, oh, it's indoors, just like every other, you know, indoor WrestleMania, but it's ginormous, you mm-hmm. know? It could fit 100,000 people.
Well,
even though they technically didn't have 100,000.
Once you fit, quote unquote, once you fit 70,000 people, like, I'm not extra impressed by 100,000.
Really?
Like, it's...
I don't know, like...
It's a nice number on the bottom of the screen.
I get that, but I felt like, honestly, watching WrestleMania, watching the Open, watching all that, it did feel like, all right, this is substantially bigger, just the size of the arena compared to other WrestleMania arenas.
I feel like if you would show me crowd, the, you know, they do that big pan across the stadium to yeah. open the show. If you showed me those back to back over several WrestleManias,
yeah.
I would have that like, oh, that's the big one.
Yeah.
I can tell the difference of adding 30,000 people, yeah. but I'm like, the last time I saw this company was on Raw or SmackDown mm-hmm. the week before. So it's always looking big now.
Yeah. And part of it, I don't know, because it felt like WrestleMania 30, the crowd, the stadium was bigger mm-hmm. than what it was.
Yeah.
And I felt like a lot of that had to do with, you know, again, we're going to be talking about the staging, but the staging for WrestleMania 30 was tall.
Yeah.
You know, and it just made the entire place feel that much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And you had like that structure hanging from the top above the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But the stage itself was pretty, you know, same as a lot of the other WrestleManias, like the last couple of years, just kind of like that flat, like screen surface and then
right.
the walkway. So I felt like they wanted to make room for as many people because they wanted to break this record. I get that. But at the same time, as far as like from a visual standpoint, if they had gone with a taller staging setup, it would have made it probably feel bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like that was a big thing. But again, like, just like when you look at how many, you know, certain camera angles, when you look how far the ring is from the next level up, you know what I mean? Like that.
Right. Yeah.
Like bleacher level.
Mm-hmm.
When they do those certain shots where you see exactly how far that is, that's when you really feel the grand scope of it. And no. I felt like it was a mile away when they were at AT&T.
Okay.
But that's just my own perspective.
And I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
It's just because there is a year of time lapse between
yeah.
the last time I've seen it. All WrestleManias in the modern era feel big. Yeah. Like they're the one, like 20 felt. When 20 was back at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
So like that one is noticeably smaller.
Compared to everything else, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when they go back to, when they go to Chicago. Going to, like, they don't even go to the United Center, which is a bigger indoor arena, mm-hmm. but they don't even go to that. They go to the one that they always go to. I forget what it's called, but like, it's like, what, could they not book the United Center? Like, they never go to that, yeah. and it's in the heart of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Anything else we need to cover this week?
Something else I was gonna bring up, and I'm blanking on it right now. Because I had to talk about this Chicago thing. Because I'm a homer like that. No, I think I'm good.
All right. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. We live tweet on Mondays, Tuesdays. They do stuff on Wednesdays that we've live tweeted in the past. And Sundays when it's appropriate. Not this Sunday, though. But Sundays when it's appropriate.
We didn't talk about a single thing that happened like this week in wrestling. Like nothing on Raw, SmackDown.
The Undertaker. The Undertaker was this week.
Well, that too. That's the only thing. Yeah. That shows you what kind of week it's been. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want to bring up on the podcast, if you want to talk about WrestleMania staging setups, now I remember what I was going to talk about, and I can bring it up next week.
All right.
if I remember. Send all that stuff over to our email. That's classringattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You get a new episode every single week. You can subscribe there and write a review or give us a rating of
5 amigos.
Anything like that really kind of helps out the podcast.
Yeah, and if you are listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We are
Also on Facebook, easy way to follow Chris, easy way to follow myself, see what kind of things we're working on. Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.